You are listening to the Angela Henderson Online Business Show, episode 465. Hey there, you amazing human, and welcome to the Angela Henderson Online Business Show, the podcast that is designed for female entrepreneurs who want to make more money in a way that is in alignment for them. If you're looking for practical advice, proven strategies, and expert insights to help you navigate the challenges of growing your business, then you've come to the right place. Welcome, my friend. I am your host, Angela Henderson, a proud Canadian living in beautiful Australia, and I'm a business coach, consultant, and strategist who has helped thousands of women around the world build successful businesses. Through solo episodes and interviews with successful business owners, industry experts, and thought leaders, you'll get insider insights into what it takes to succeed in today's digital age. Whether you're struggling to scale your business, looking for ways to boost your productivity, or seeking ways to overcome the challenges of being an entrepreneur, this show has everything you need to succeed and more. So subscribe, pop your headphones on, and get ready to creating the business and life you deserve today by allowing the Angela Henderson Online Business Show help you create a winning strategy, develop the right mindset, and build lasting wealth. What does it really cost to stand up to power, and would you be brave enough to do so? Most people think leadership is all about confidence, strategy, and influence, but real leadership is tested in the moments when staying silent is so much easier, when speaking up could cost you absolutely everything. Today's guest didn't just talk about integrity, she absolutely lived it. Jo Tanarski worked inside powerful institutions and made the decision to challenge the Australian government, and guess what? She won. But that decision came with a personal cost most people never see. Today, we're unpacking what power really looks like behind closed doors, what moral courage actually requires, and what real leadership is when the system pushes back. Jo, I'm so, so grateful you're here. Hey there, Jo. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Angela. It's great to be here.
I'm super excited to have you here. And it's funny, right before we press record, I was just talking to you about how, I mean, we've only come into each other's life. I met you up in Brisbane recently, maybe it was just before Christmas. And I didn't have a clue who you were. I had no idea who you were. And then I just started to follow you on socials. And I was like, this is an amazing human. And she has a story specifically for me as a business owner. And the word leadership comes into place. But also with leadership, there's this notion about, do we use our voice? Do we not use our voice? Women have been told that we're too much in society at times. Be quiet, don't speak up. And I was like, no, you do it so, like, it's just in such an elegant way. And you just are this force to be reckoned with that I knew I had to have you on the podcast. So I'm super, super excited to have you here.
Well, thank you. I'm really happy to be here too. And I'm really looking forward to having you in Canberra soon.
I know. I can't wait. It's less than, I mean, at time of recording, we're at beginning of February. But yes, I will see you in March and I get to give you another hug. So I'm super excited for you to welcome me into your hometown. It's going to be amazing.
It is. I'm really looking forward to it.
Now, before we dive into speaking about power and leadership today, I think it's important to give the listener out there a quick snapshot of what actually has gone on in the context of the last couple of years, because that connects with where we're going with this particular podcast. In fact, like I said to you before we start recording, when I went to that event in Brisbane, I knew nothing about you. I didn't know you were connected to the government or politics or anything. I just like, oh, this looks cool. I'll come, do you know what I mean, to this event.
Yes.
So I think there'll be other people, especially if they're listening from other parts of the world out there, who may not know your story. So if you can briefly walk us through, you know, what happened, what you witnessed in the system, and what ultimately led you to make the decision to kind of take on, you know, and use your voice with the government, that would be great.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Queensland was a very happy place for me to be. When you come to Canberra, you realize it's a bit like a big small town and a lot of people are connected to the government. But I spent more than 20 years working in the Australian government. I was a diplomat. Most of my career, I was a diplomat and I was posted overseas to a whole range of places. I worked in Papua New Guinea, in Iraq, in Africa. My last posting was in Italy. And I came back to Australia. I ended up working for our Governor General, who I understand you've got listeners from overseas. In our constitutional system, it's a little bit like the president, not with the powers of a US president. If somebody's in Canada, they will understand Governor General more, mm-hmm. Or somewhere in the Commonwealth, but they sit at the head of our system, mm-hmm. constitutionally. And so I was a senior executive to the Governor General, and then My last job, I was chief of staff to Australia's deputy prime minister, who is also the minister for defence. And this was actually the dream job that I had wanted when since I was a kid and I first visited Parliament House. I never wanted to be a politician, but I wanted to be sort of someone who was influential, a key advisor behind the scenes. So to be asked to do this had sort of been a lifelong dream. And I loved that job. It gave me a front row seat to how power works. I was in, as Hamilton would say, I was in the room where it would happen. There were some big decisions being made. I was walking corridors with people that, and in rooms with people that those who follow politics would routinely see on television. And I felt like everything had sort of culminated through to that position and that moment. But why, you know, sometimes things in life go a little off script, and I found myself in a situation where I was becoming increasingly targeted in a toxic work environment. Now, those in Australia would really know that this took hold across Australia. Stories out of Parliament House in the last couple of years, there was sort of march for women's justice after Brittany Higgins came out with her story. And there was a whole body of work done as part of the Jenkins Review and the Set the Standard report, where 1,700 people came forward to tell their stories. The government had said it was, you know, we're going to make all these reforms, it's going to be better. And so when the and so you know, we were in that period where the review had been handed down and change was supposed to happen. I was the most senior female staffer on the Hill as the chief of staff to the deputy prime minister. And I found myself targeted, and I found, and what had happened was I had raised a workplace concern privately with my boss about some behavior I was experiencing, and I was shocked at what happened next. I was isolated from my job. I ended up being basically banned from my office, sidelined from my role, and I kept that quiet for a very long time as I tried to navigate through. It was extremely traumatic. And then as I was getting increasingly pushed out, I made the life-changing decision that instead of going away quietly, I was going to stand up and say something. And so in October 2024, I held my first national press conference. I disclosed what was happening. The government then doubled down. They still wouldn't engage with me. And so I ended up having to sue the Deputy Prime Minister, the Prime Minister's Chief of Staff, and the Commonwealth in the federal court. The matter was ultimately settled out of court just before the election, not quite a year ago. Hardest thing I've ever done, but it means that I have literally seen and confronted power in all its glory, which I know is what you want to talk about today.
Absolutely. I mean, first of all, as I briefly mentioned when you were at that event, you know, I'm so sorry you had to go through that, because no one should have to go through that. But the reality of it is this shit still is happening every single day, not only here in Australia, but around the world. And what I loved is that you had the courage to be able to stand up to power, and that I can get a vibe about power, and you'll have a different definition of power, and everyone listening will have a different definition of power. So I just want to bring us all back to just understanding, like, when you define, how are you defining power, you know, and then how is power connected to like business and life in general? Because I think it's important that we're all coming from the same page as we carry on this conversation about power today.
Yeah, that's a really good point, because I think if you're in politics, power sort of has a certain meaning. If you're looking at what's happening in international relations, if you're in business. But I think if we're looking at sort of a general description of what power is, it's the capacity to shape outcomes. So whether or not that's through decisions or systems or relationships, it's about whose voices get heard, whose interests are protected, who carries the cost when things go wrong, and how we sort of get to decisions and outcomes in the way that we do. So for me, I guess whether you're in business or you're seeking change in your community, you might be part of a school administration or working in a charity. If you're applying for grants, you're engaging with power, often without realizing it. It could be on a micro level, or it could be on a very public level. So understanding how power works is critical, and it can really make the difference between landing an outcome or being sidelined.
100%. And each two, would you also say that each individual involved in a conversation, a situation, etc., will also be looking at, like, how does this power influence and or impact them and their family? So, like, it's like multi-layered in many ways.
It is. And I think one of the key things is you learn, if you focus on how power works, is that logic alone won't get you there. You need to understand what drives the system or the person who is holding the power, what influences them, what will stop them doing what you're seeking. There are a number of factors at play.
What would you say are some of the driving factors that you've seen in your experience over the years that drive people to do what they do?
Well, I think in the more, like if you look at politics, for example, and in fact, I'm writing about this on Substack at the moment, a series on power. That is one of the key takeaways of the first piece I've written in the series, actually, is understanding that people who hold power, their drivers is often to protect it. And so in the same way as I just said, logic won't get you there alone. Sometimes I think you can go into conversations thinking that, you know, you're approaching them with the same, you know, take climate change, take gambling reform, take a whole range of things. Logic won't get you there alone. And I think sometimes there's been some things that maybe in my early career would surprise me, but would surprise people who haven't sort of sat and thought deeply about power, about how it actually works rather than how we're told it works. So it doesn't just sit with titles or informal settings, for example. It's exercised through relationships, incentives, fear. Silence is something I talk about a lot because through my experience, I have really learned that silence is not neutral. It can be an active stabilizer of unhealthy systems and of power. And I think inside powerful institutions, some of the things that you learn is, two big takeaways. Some of the most influential voices aren't always the most visible or the loudest voices in the room.
Yes.
So, for example, if you're in Australia and you do follow politics, the amount of times I will often hear people talk about so-and-so should be prime minister, but not understanding that just because they're very visible on television doesn't mean they hold power internally within the party.
Yes.
The other thing is that many consequential decisions often happen before or outside a formal meeting room. So if I actually in politics, that is also the same, but in diplomacy, anybody who's sort of worked in that or in big government meetings will kind of know that in all the preparatory work, the going back before parties and everything, by the time the VIPs have sort of walked into the room to have the discussion, they've got their talking points, their sort of statements already read that they're going to be signing, you know, that hasn't been done in the room.
Yes.
And so there's a lot of activity that happens outside of that. And I think it's true in geopolitics, in workplaces, and in business.
So it's like, and obviously some of that work has to be done because you can't, if you only have a 2-hour meeting or a half day meeting, you're not going to get everyone's views across at that stage. But do you also think though, that some of that can also then be used almost as a weapon for going into those meetings? Meaning like, there's another agenda that people might hold within another layer of power
yes.
versus on the, like, again, I'm just looking at this, like all the layers that
yep.
are coming from, like there's different people have different agendas also.
Absolutely. And so if I step back and think that through, one of the easiest ways to look at that is alliances, where people have sort of conversations before they go into a room that they may vote in a certain way, or they're going to decide in a certain way. And whether you're on a board, for example, and you know there's a controversial issue, you're going to have conversations around that, and you're going to try and work out who may be in alliance with you or have a similar view. And so definitely that is a factor.
Now, when we think about power and the notion of speaking up, people love the idea of speaking up, but in my experience, they rarely talk about the cost when you speak up.
Yeah.
Now, when you had to go through what you did and have the courage to do what you did, there was things that cost you this by speaking
yep.
up. And so I'm
yep.
curious to know, what did moral courage actually cost you in the grand scheme of things? Before we continue with this episode, I want to ask you something. If someone asked you, are you a speaker? What would you say? Now, before you dismiss that, you're already speaking. You're speaking in sales conversations. You're speaking on Zoom calls. You're speaking in rooms where decisions are being made about your business. The real question isn't, are you speaking? But rather, are you still doing the talking without the payoff? That's why I'm excited to share our 2026 gold sponsor for my 3-day Women in Business Conference, Jacqueline Brooker, founder of the Business of Speaking. Jacqueline teaches founders how to turn their expertise into bookable assets, paid stages, and speaking-driven revenue streams. This isn't about hype or manifesting a keynote. It's about positioning, structure, and commercial strategy. If you've ever thought, "I know my work is powerful, but I'm not landing the right opportunities," this is for you. Jacqueline has gifted my audience her free guide, The Paid Speaker One Sheet Swipe Files, showing you exactly how to position yourself so event organizers and decision makers see you as worth paying. You can download it now at businessofspeaking.com.au/swipefiles4ang. Again, that URL is businessofspeaking.com.au/swipefiles4ang. If you're ready to speak like your business depends on it, start here by heading to Jacqueline's URL, businessofspeaking.com.au/swipefiles4ang. Now let's get back to the episode.
A lot is the short answer, but I would quickly add that as hard as it was, I don't have any regrets. And I think because I'm a very values-driven person and my integrity is what mattered in that situation, it is without a doubt the hardest thing I've ever been through. And I'm somebody who has survived cancer. I have been held up at gunpoint more than once. And I've had to sort of reflect deeply on when I say that, I think people think I sort of say it casually, but it comes from a point of understanding what hard things look like. And I think the difference here is because it was so mean and it was so targeted. And then on top of that, I was confronting the most powerful people in the country.
Totally.
And I had to be willing to do that on my own. I knew the way the party worked that, and I actually said this in my first press conference. I said that you watch what will happen now. They will circle around him to protect themselves. It wasn't about who was right. It was about protecting their own power. Mm-hmm. And so I had to be willing to stand there alone. I've told friends too. I mean, friends know me that one of my big fears in life is snakes. As an Australian, that's a real fear, but it's only matched by, until that point, my other fear was being seen on television. Mm-hmm. I wasn't, you know, if you go back to that childhood story, I wasn't chasing fame. I actively wanted to be behind the scenes.
Yes.
And so I actually have never rewatched that first press conference because I knew I was shaking. I was shaking like a leaf facing a wall of cameras. And I think that is the thing around bravery and courage. It's not the absence of fear. It is absolutely knowing that you are afraid and what it will cost you and making a determined choice that you'll do it anyway. Mm-hmm. In terms of what else it cost, I think I've had enough time and I've had great psychological support. It's been an excellent tool. And in some ways, I've framed a lot of the costs now actually as gifts. So for totally. Example, you could look at it in terms of the friends I have lost because they didn't want to be uncomfortable and they were afraid that if they spoke up or if they had anything to do with me, that then they would be targeted. Mm. But I choose to look at the fact that I've been given a gift, that I know exactly who my friends are now.
Yeah.
And for everyone that I've lost, I've, you know, LinkedIn has been such a powerful connector for me. I've made real life friends through that. People who reached out after that first press conference going, "I see you, what you're doing is important, keep going." Going. Mm. And so I found new friends. And I also, I guess, I really worked out what I was made of and how strong my values were. So I've had to walk away from I wasn't forced to walk away from my career in government. I could have gone back to the public service, but I think once my voice was out of the box, I'd had to grow so much and confront so much. Going back to a bureaucratic job after that just didn't feel right. But it means that I've had to walk away from an entire career. And now I'm happily running my own business, but it's certainly not a world I ever envisaged. It was never on my bucket list to run my own business. And so I've had to just sort of learn to embrace the changes and the opportunities that's come with the costs of what happened.
And like you said, I love the reframe because I'm all about there's never failures or mistakes. There's always lessons. But when you're in the thick of it, you're like, fuck the lessons because like it hurts, right?
Oh yeah.
And so when you were in it, yeah, it cost you, you know, emotionally, professionally, relationships, friendships. But on the back end, like you said, there's so many beautiful gifts that have given it. It's given you your voice. I'm assuming it's also given you your confidence. You could probably read a room even better than what you've ever been able to read a room before. You probably cut through bullshit quicker if people are trying to be friends with you. Like, I mean, these are all beautiful. Life is short, right? We really not here earthside very long. So what a beautiful way to reframe. And I can relate. I used to work for government and I was in charge of a $3 million portfolio for mental health. And I remember I found out that one of our consumers had passed away due to suicide, but this a particular organization had continued to basically launder the money, you could say. And when I made that aware to the big people, they told me to be quiet. Meanwhile, we have people in the high secure unit or inpatient unit that could have used that money to get them back into society and lives a life that works for them. And I just thought at that stage, my personal brand had just started to come. And I thought, not only is this wrong, but if this gets out, their target, I'm the target because I'm the one in charge of this portfolio and they don't have my back. As soon as I knew, they told me to shush. So I printed everything off that I needed to print. I went to the lawyer, I gave it to the lawyer, and I said, "What do I need to do?" I said, because at that stage, I said, "I need to be able to look my children in the eye and know that I've done the right thing." I said, "And I need to know that I'm sticking up for people who don't have a voice, which are those who have severe mental illness." And the lawyer said, "You know, as soon as I press send on this, you're going to have a target on your back." I said, "Put the target on my back, but I can look my children in the eye." I said, "And if I die
Absolutely.
tomorrow, I die knowing that I did the right thing by myself, but also my children and
100%.
society." And that's exactly what happened, you know, is I wore the same clothes that I had for 5 years. I then got written up because I had breached code of conduct for dress code. Like everything, like it just started. And then I had to take leave. I became depressed. I got anxiety. And so I was off on leave for a long time. And eventually I ended up quitting because they just kept pushing like it was my problem with the psychological distress. It's like, and again, and so though our stories are very different, but I understand the emotional cost, the professional cost. I mean, I lost my identity in some ways because that's all I knew was my clinical background for many years. However, what it's given me is such a breath of fresh air. The thought of like, I'm now unemployable is what I say. I don't think I could ever go back to a 9 to 5 day job, nor do I want to. Because when you talk about power, the one thing that I realized was I'm not going to be someone that sits down and be quiet and is quiet, and that most times systems won't change. Unless you've got other people's power on board, like you said. So whether or not it's driven by money, ego, status, whatever that looks like. And I was like, I don't have the fight in me to keep fighting for shit that's not going to change. So that's why going out on my own and starting my own businesses has been the breath of fresh air because it's up to me to make that change. So yeah, but it sucks when you're in it, but it's a blessing when you come out the other side.
But 100%, and I'm with you. You get one life, so let's live it purposefully. And I think that's the other thing that comes from now. I again, in terms of reframing, I've had a career of traditional public service, but I feel that I have a different career now in public service because of the impact and how I can help others. Because toxic workplaces are sadly, everywhere. I've done a lot of research and I've connected with a lot of psychologists and academics to understand how they work, the playbook. Like you said, it impacts your identity. We throw so much, often high performers are targeted, ethical people are targeted. And I deliberately use the word targeted. I think sometimes we think of ourselves as victims, but nope, it's targeted. Let's put the blame where it needs to be, on the people who do the harm. And so, I think your situation and what you've just described is absolutely classic. It was right that you'll look at, firstly, congratulations to you for documenting everything and for being able to understand the consequences up front. A lot of people are sort of so swimming in confusion that they can't see as clearly. I have another saying, which is keep yourself tidy. So what you've done in terms of documenting everything and standing up and actually saying it, even though you're right, the reason you're targeted is because what you're saying is inconvenient. You're disrupting the status quo and you're not playing the game. And so that is a classic reason for everything that has happened to you. And you're right, it's a life quake. It changes you. But that's also part of the hope that I hope to share with others is that, yes, there's this rupture, but there is a life on the other side. And I can tell you that I feel so much more peace.
Yes.
I feel that my trauma would have been worse if I didn't do what I did. Because just like you, I can look at my child in the face. She knew that, like, she's going into high school. She started this month. And I know she's going to confront bullies. I know all of these things. I know that we tell her, you know, there's no secret that's too big not to share. And here I was covering.
Yes.
We stand up to bad behavior. We stand up to bullies. And I couldn't get her through these years and not be living what I want to be, you know, sharing with her and imparting to her. So
I also think for me too, it was also, I there was a saying that I said, like, if my daughter came to me in that same situation or my son, what would I tell them to do?
Yep.
And I was like what you said, how could I advise them to do something? But yet I didn't have the balls to do it myself. And I was like, you know, I would be wholeheartedly saying to my kids, fuck this, you know, it's game on. Let's do it strategically. Because again, I'm very big about documentation. If you don't have it documented, no one cares.
And even with
documentation, sometimes depending on a judge or whoever, it might sway against you anyway. You know, so even though documentation is good, it doesn't mean it's like a ticket to, you know, a golden ticket. But I would, if I was saying to my kids, what would I say to them? I'd be like, game on. This is shit. Yep. Do you know what I mean? Do not put your values and your beliefs and all of this aside. And you, at the end of it, even though that, I have to be able to look myself in the mirror.
Yep.
If I can't look my own self in the mirror, then I'm a fraud, I think, to others. And so, yeah, man, it sucked. I lost. And also it was like the feeling of, you're like, you're getting messages from friends going, listen, Ange, I want to help you. I was in a room when this went down, but like, if I say something and I lose this, I'm the breadwinner and I've got no money to pay for, you know, our house and our mortgage. And they're like, I did. So they'd say, like, I need you to know that I see you and I support you, but I can't, like, do you mean go in battle with you? And and that was a really important thing for me too, because I was like, I was on my own battlefield, just like you said. It was like, there is no one coming to save me. And that's one of the biggest things I've learned in life. Even when I asked for my divorce, is nobody's coming to save you. And you've got to be able to stand on your own. You do. There's an element of it.
And there's things that you control and things that you can't. I mean, it's good those people came forward and actually articulated where they were at. Most people will fall away and just be silent. They won't actually articulate the balancing of the risks that they're doing.
Yeah.
Most people just go silent and absent. But I think that says so much more about them than it does about you. And
100%.
You can only control yourself.
Yep.
And so that is also why, I mean, when my legal case ended, I didn't think I was going to lean into this space. I had so much other career. I just wanted to close the chapter, but I have also recognized how much I can help people.
Yep.
And so, you know, that is something that I have chosen to do out of this, because it is very difficult to push up against those powerful systems. It's also, I think, important for listeners out there who may be witnessing it. You may not be targeting it, but you too have a choice as to what you do. And so, yeah, I think it's amazing that we both have these experiences, Angela.
And this is interesting, because I look at it as, and some people will say, like, you know, a lot of people think courage means blowing everything up, right? Or walking away dramatically.
Yeah.
In our instances, we probably blew shit up. You probably more than me, but we still blew shit up, right?
Yeah.
Not everyone wants to blow shit up, let's be honest. So for someone who wants to still create change without burning everything down, what does responsible courage did mean? Or what does, you know, reasonable, responsible courage actually look like in practice? Because not everyone might be at a 10 or at a 9, right? They might be at a 5 going, I still need it, you know. So, or I guess another way that I could say is, for those out there going, you know, this is bullshit in the business or my contractors or whatever, I need to say something. When should you push from within versus just walk away?
Sure. Well, this is a really good question, because if you'd asked me 2 years ago, I'd have a very different answer. Uh-huh. I was always a good girl. I did not cause trouble. I was trained as a diplomat. What do diplomats do? We go out, we consult, we have conversations, and we do things in a very calm way. We deliberately don't look to blow things up. Like it was so far beyond what was trained in me and what was instinctive in me. It took, like I said, 5 months before I went public. It was not the first tool in my kit. I tried to negotiate it myself. I tried to work out what was happening. I tried to make compromises and agree to things that, you know, because I just didn't understand why it was happening. I tried to get help from elsewhere within the party. I gave them every opportunity, and it was really the hardest thing to work out. I've got two choices left, which is to walk away and continue to cover for them, which I just felt I couldn't do, or to stand up and say something. So I think I now say that I embrace good trouble, and I have learned to flex my courage muscles. I think by confronting all those fears and having to do it in the way that I did, it has meant that I've got more of an appetite to be able to do it now, because I've faced the most powerful people in the country and I've stared them down. I would not, it's a bit like having cancer. When I had cancer, you would never wish that on anyone. I take from that things that made me different and change my life in certain ways, and hopefully can help others. So starting from that, I wasn't somebody that went to go and blow things up. But I do also think courage is often sold as speaking loudly, walking away, something big and dramatic. But actually, there's a lot of courage that comes from measured, well-timed, and well-judged action. So it's about choosing actions that you can stand by later. That question of integrity that you were just talking about. So it can be about stepping back and thinking, what am I trying to change? Who else is affected, and what leverage do I actually have? It can be something as simple as when you've got a dominant personality in a meeting where somebody is maybe treating someone unfairly or dismissing their views or not allowing someone to speak. That if you are in that room sort of saying, I think so-and-so just wants to have a word, or I like what he or she said, to back them in so that they're not alone. And that can be really hard when the most comfortable thing is to sit back. I think also courage, there's a personal courage that comes in any situation, whether it's life or business. You can apply it to anything. It's about being able to name a problem calmly and clearly. So that phrase, you know, looking at the world the way it is, not the way you want it to be, because I think sometimes it's comfort that holds us back from actually looking at the reality of situations. And it takes a lot of courage sometimes to look at something and understand this relationship's not working, this job's not working, this situation isn't right. You know, you can apply it to 100 different scenarios, but stepping out of your comfort zone and using your courage to acknowledge reality is kind of also a first and really important step.
I like that one. I really, because again, I mean, there's the awareness piece. There's the brave, like, I think it's all in one. It's not just courage. There's so many, again, it's multi-layered, right? Like,
yes,
there's lots of conversations I have that are layered, but I feel this one, there's so many layering. Also, it's like your upbringing and your trauma background and, you know, where do you feel safe and where do you not feel safe? But I like that as a stepping point. My question, though, as we start to wrap up, is I'm curious to know that after everything you've been through, including cancer, taking on the government, has your definition of leadership changed during this time?
So I think there were some things that were always part of my values. I think they became stronger and louder. And I think if I'm thinking about the one thing that changed most as part of what happened to me at Parliament House, is the lesson that leadership isn't just about what we do. It's also about what we don't do. It's about what we tolerate. And I learned that silence always has a cost and someone always has to pay it. So whether you're in business or it's life or you're in a workplace or any one of those situations, I think learning to recognize that is key. Because I think we often think of it as action, but sometimes it's inaction. And I think too, despite everything that's happened, it would be very easy for me to be sort of bitter and angry. But I actually just believe we can do better. And I think it's up to all of us.
Well, we have to take radical responsibility for our own life, right? It's, you know, I often say inside of my mastermind and my one-on-one clients, if you were on your deathbed tomorrow and you only had 1 week left to live, what would you regret? And when I ask this to these particular clients, they're like, there's some of them, not all of them would say, I would regret not standing up for this. I would regret not using my voice for this. And I'm like, well, what are you going to do to change that? Because our days are numbered. Every day isn't another day. It's one day less before we're 6 feet under. Use your days wisely. Use your voice. Use your courage wisely, because life is short.
Absolutely. And I completely agree with that. I wrote a piece around New Year where people were looking at New Year's resolutions. Mm-hmm. I think what you say about regrets is right. And it's often phrased in that way about not doing the brave thing or the hard thing, mm-hmm. And the cost that that is. And so I wrote a piece on Substack around the cost of comfort. Mm-hmm. So what is it that's holding you back from doing that brave thing? Mm-hmm. It'll be different for all of us, but it goes back to your point about living a life that you don't regret at the end of it, that you did the brave thing.
100%. We have to, like, I don't know, life is short, and I've had a lot of death and, you know, in my life, and I just go, man, it's, are you being true to yourself? Are you saying what you need to say? And kind of, I also think, and there's studies showing around as we increase menopause, perimenopause and menopause, we actually, like, our body physiologically gives less fucks. Like, generally, there's a research study about it. And I also think I'm just in my era where I give less fucks, right? So, you know, between that and just being able to not have those regrets on my deathbed, I think is a very important thing.
And there's a lot of women that I meet around midlife who are also questioning, after they've given so much to their workplaces, to their families, how much is in it for them? Their tolerance becomes a little smaller. There's also career pivots that mm-hmm. happen. So while mine might not have been by design, some people's are, that they just sort of work out that the life that they're living isn't one that actually suits them. It has sort of happened over time, and they want to make more conscious choices about what they do next. So I don't think we're alone there.
100%. Now, this has been awesome. I obviously could talk to you for hours, and I'm eagerly awaiting my arrival in Canberra, where I believe we will continue these juicy conversations. Yes. So I'm really excited for that. However, for those listeners out there that are like, this is awesome, I need a little piece of Joe in my life, where can they find you? What are you getting up to?
I'm very active on LinkedIn and Instagram, so you can find me there, and I have a website. Mm-hmm. I am also writing a series this month on power on my Substack, uh-huh. which provides you with sort of an inside view of what it looks like from the inside and some of the lessons that I've learned, so that you can apply them to be more effective in your own lives. Mm-hmm. I've also got, for anybody who is either navigating or in the aftermath of a toxic workplace or knows somebody that is, I've got an on-demand video series and guidebook that's available online. And I've set up a discount code, Angela, for you and your listeners mm-hmm. that you can use through to the end of March. It's Angela2026, and it'll give you 26% off. And that has basically been born because of what I went through, and that because I couldn't find anything like this when I was isolated, traumatized, and not able to articulate what it was that was happening to me and why. And it's sort of information that I've been able to gather from a whole range of sources and put it together in one bundle, so that people know they're not alone, know there's a way through, and why it's impacting them so badly.
I love that. Thank you so much for sharing that. And again, whether or not it's you that needs that, or whether or not it might be your partner, hubby, family member at home, make sure to grab that. We will have all of Joe's links in our show notes with that coupon code by heading to angelahenderson.com.au and click on the latest podcast episode. But Joe, before we wrap up, I've got one final question. I know you're still new to business, but your experience in life, you know what I mean, is phenomenal. But thinking about your business journey in the last year, what do you know now that you wish you knew when you first started out in business?
Oh, I'm just having fun. I'm loving the connections. What I love about it more than anything that has probably surprised me is the creativity it brings and the freedom. Mm-hmm. So yes, I don't have the financial sort of, I don't have that salary and income and everything that is sort of coming in that I'm now creating myself, but I am constantly driving around town with ideas buzzing. Mm-hmm. It has just unleashed this sort of innovative spirit in me and the ability to collaborate with others, like people like you, Angela. Mm-hmm. I'm also working with somebody here in Canberra for International Women's Day, and I'm loving getting together with people and collaborating on things. Mm-hmm. So I'm really enjoying it, actually, given it wasn't ever on my bucket list. I don't know what I ever thought a business would be, yeah. but I'm having a lot of fun.
Oh, well, I love that for you. And listen, saddle up, sister, because it's only going to get funner. I promise you, there is going to be so many opportunities. And yeah, like I adore business. So I'm excited for you. You're in the great space. And if I can ever do anything, you know where I'm at, obviously. But at this today, Joe, I just want to say thank you. Thank you for being vulnerable. Thank you for having the courage. And thank you for leaning into your power and using your voice. For women in particular, our voices have been squashed for many, many years, centuries, decades, etc. And it is refreshing to see someone taking a stand and willing to use their voice. So thank you so much for your integrity, your responsibility in showing others the way, and your courage, because it truly, truly matters. And for you, you amazing listener out there, no matter where you are in the world, I hope you have a beautiful day. And I look forward to you joining us again next week for another awesome podcast episode of the Angela Henderson Online Business Show. Thanks again, Joe.
Thanks, Angela. I look forward to seeing you in Canberra soon.
Thanks for listening to the Angela Henderson Online Business Show, www.angelahenderson.com.au.